Today's podcast is brought to you by Howie's new book, Paperboy. To order today, go to HowieCarshow.com and click on store.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
We got to bring in a new voice, a young voice, a rising voice. Grace Curley.
You can read Grace's work in the Boston Herald and the Spectator.
Especially Grace. Grace, stand up.
Here's the millennial with the mic, Grace Curley.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. The world is certainly tuning in to the trials of Donald J. Trump. There's so many, it's hard to keep count. And meanwhile, the nation, and especially here in Massachusetts, is very focused on the Karen Reed murder case. This is the story out of Canton that has, it's really a wild, wild story. And someone who's been on top of it since the beginning is Aidan Kearney from otherwise known as Turtle Boy. Aidan joins us now. Aidan, I want to rewind here before we get into what's going on today and just go back to yesterday. Four jurors were selected in the first trial day. And from what I was reading in the Herald, it seems like almost everyone they talked to had an idea of this case one way or the other. A lot of them said they were very opinionated on the case. Did that surprise you, Turtle Boy? And if you had to guess, people who are familiar with the case, what side do you think they tend to lean on, the jurors who were being brought in and questioned?
Number one, it doesn't surprise me at all. We've done an outstanding job of educating the populace about the injustices happening here in Norfolk County. And I would assume that of the 12 people who raised their hand to say today and said that they had a bias in this case, that all 12 of them were biased towards believing that Karen Reed was innocent. I can't believe that anyone would be biased towards believing she's guilty because the facts clearly show that she's innocent.
Yeah, part of this story that the judge commented on yesterday is this idea of allowing the defense to use a third party killer theory, which Turtle Boy, and maybe I'm oversimplifying it, but it seems like if anyone wanted to find out about the third party killer theory, they would have been following your reporting on Karen Reed because you kind of lay that out. But what the judge said in this case is they can develop the theory during questioning and in evidence, but they can't outright state it in their opening. What do you make of that, and how do you think that's going to affect this trial?
Oh, you know, I'm sure they have a plan for this. I would assume that means they just can't come outright and say it in their opening statement, but they start asking questions of jurors. Like, for instance, if they ask Jennifer McCabe, why did you Google how long to die in cold at 2:27 a.m. if you thought that he was at home in bed? That would certainly imply to a juror that she was involved in some sort of plot to murder
right.
John O'Keefe. And that she lied to police. So I think that's what they mean by that, is it will all come out with witness testimony.
Yeah, and obviously there's been a buffer zone implemented here for the Free Karen Reed supporters.
Yeah, I'm here right now, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, give us an update on that. What's the sentiment among those people who are there supporting Karen Reed? Are they angry about the buffer zone? Are people abiding by it? Or are people pushing the limits? What's going on?
Yeah, there's been no arrest so far. So there is a there's like these cones up all over the place. I'm looking at one right now. And it's you got to stand behind those if you want to protest. So we have people with signs outside of the 200-foot zone. And by the way, every car that comes into this complex goes by those areas. So like every person coming in sees it. So I'm not sure what problem they're trying to solve, but it certainly didn't silence the people. Now, I've been inside the 200-foot zone, and I'm not like holding a sign or anything like that. I'm wearing pink in support of Karen Reed, but they haven't outlawed that color yet. I mean, they might soon, but we'll just pick a new color then. But yeah, so, you know, there's a decent amount of people here. Yes, I mean, it's kind of boring here, to be perfectly honest with you. They're upstairs interviewing people one by one, eliminating them. They keep sending jurors out. I'm told the courtroom's less than half empty. They still won't allow us in. But quite frankly, not much is going on. I'm told they picked three more today, so they're up to seven. Which, you know, at this rate, we will have a jury by the end of the week, and we can get down to business starting on Monday.
Yeah, and they're saying they expect this trial to last 6 weeks or more. Now, Turtle Boy, you're not part of the defense team or anything like that, but what are some of the parts of this case that you really hope that Karen Reed's defense team hones in on and brings forward and really does, you know, showcase to the jury? What are some details that you hope get a lot of attention?
Well, what I like is that they have three people on the witness list who are trained experts in, I believe, I don't know if it's biomechanics or something, but they're experts when it comes to crash reconstruction.
Yeah.
And these are the same experts that the FBI hired who determined that John O'Keefe could not have possibly been hit by a car based on the injuries on his body. He couldn't have been caused by a car. And so we're going to hear from these people. I mean, these are smart, intelligent people who do this stuff for a living. They have expertise in skull fractures and whatnot. And when the jury hears from these people who literally do this for a living, and they're saying that guy was not hit by a car. If he was not hit by a car, that means Kennedy didn't kill him, which means someone in that house did. And they should probably ask why the police didn't even go inside that house, didn't question any of these people. And then they're going to see that all these people are connected and they all have ties to law enforcement and they've run the town of Canton since the beginning of time. And they're going to start putting the clues together. I have no doubt about it.
Now, the witness list is huge. Who would you say is the most important person that gets questioned in this case?
I would say the most important people in this case to question are Jennifer McCabe and Michael Proctor. Easily. Thank you. I would suggest because Jennifer McCabe, obviously, she has to explain why she Googled how long to die in cold. You know, she was the quarterback of this whole cover-up. She was there when the body was discovered. She was the person that did the 911 call, right? She's come to all of these court proceedings and rubbed the shoulder of Peggy O'Keefe, and it formed a group called Peggy's Angels in support of her. She changed her profile picture yesterday to a picture of in loving memory of John O'Keefe. Yet she Googled how long to die in cold at 227 to make sure that John would expire before his body was discovered. It's sick. So she'll be a very important witness, and so will Michael Proctor. He's the lead detective in this. He's under internal affairs investigation. How's that going to play to a jury when your lead detective in this is under internal affairs investigation for lying to a state grand jury, the same state grand jury that indicted the defendant in front of you right now?
I'm reading here for the Boston Herald. It says, of note is that Norfolk District Attorney Michael Morrissey himself makes an appearance on the defense's witness list. What do you make of that, Turtle Boy, and what do you expect?
That's a great one. That's a great one. I would expect they're going to get him up there and have him explain why he made statements on August 25th vouching for witnesses, the credibility of witnesses in this case, which he's ethically bound not to do. More importantly, why he got up there in that statement on August 25th, and he specifically said that Michael Proctor has no personal relationship with any of the witnesses in that house, none of them. That has now been, we knew it was untrue. You know, I've been reporting this since day one that we've been able to prove that's untrue, that he had personal relationships with the McAlberts. But now the FBI has also proven that with text messages from people like Julie Albert offering Michael Proctor gifts, offering him a gift on the day that Karen Reed was arrested, a thank you gift, she called it. And it just so happened that her son was in the house, has known Michael Proctor for decades, and was never questioned about his involvement in this. And that is instead of saying, you know, that's improper, Julie, you shouldn't do that, I got to report this to my superior, he said, give it to my wife instead. And so, you know, Michael Morrissey's going to have to explain why he got up there and lied, and he personally vouched for Michael Proctor, and it turned out to be all untrue.
How do the people, you know, I can hear that you're outside. I'm sure you're, you know, with other supporters who are there with their signs, you know, free Karen Reed. I saw a sign that said Karen Reed was the only one trying to save John's life. Is the overall, I hate to use this word vibe, but are people feeling optimistic? Do people think that Karen Reed is going, that justice will be served here? Do you feel optimistic, Turtle Boy?
I have no doubt that Karen Reed's not going to be convicted of this crime, but that would not be justice. Justice would be that the people who actually did this are held responsible by the FBI, because God knows we can't count on, you know, the state police or the district attorney's office to hold these people accountable. So we're going to need a higher authority to come in and do that. And so we don't know what the feds are doing. We don't know where their investigation is at. And until people are actually indicted who aren't named Karen Reed, we will never have true justice, because we don't want to turn her. If Karen Reed is found not guilty with this, people's opinions aren't going to change. You're still going to have some people out there running their mouths saying that she's Casey Anthony or O.J. Simpson, that she got away with murder. And that's not justice. Justice is the people who actually did this being held responsible for it.
Yeah. Now, speaking of Karen Reed's Hurta Boy, and this is my last question for you. Any idea of how she's holding up? I mean, obviously, she's received a tremendous amount of support, not only on social media and things like that, but fundraising wise, people, there's been an outpouring of support for her. There's a lot of people who believe her, yourself included. There's a lot of people who support her. But this is stressful, no matter who you are. This is traumatic. So how is she holding up? Like, what is her headspace right now? Can you give us any insight into that from what you know?
Karen Reed is a soldier. She is the strongest, toughest-willed person I've ever spoken to in my entire life. The fact that she can stand strong and come into the court with a confident smile on her face every day. And she knows, like if you ever had a conversation with Karen Reed, she knows that the FBI is going, she is 100% confident the FBI is going to indict the people who did this to her boyfriend and who turned her life upside down and to murder John O'Keefe, that they're going to be held responsible. Now, I mean, she's a stronger person than I am. You know, I mean, the average person in the situation would have broke a long time ago, but I honestly, truly believe that, God picked a strong person for this to happen to, in order to show the level of corruption in Norfolk County. It takes an extremely strong person, and Karen Reed is that person.
And you know, my last question is, Turtle Boy, because I live close to Canton, and I've seen people out, you know, with the Where's Chloe signs and the Free Karen Reed signs. But over time, I haven't seen as much of it. And even though the national media has picked up the story more, I'm curious about the people there. Do you think, you just said it's boring right now, do you think as this trial goes on, they're expecting it to go on for maybe more than 6 weeks, is this going to become a bit of a zoo? Is this going to become a media circus?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yesterday I was doing interviews with all sorts of national media outlets. Fox News did a story on me yesterday. The Daily Mail had me in there. And so, before, you know, it was WCVB. It was the Boston Herald. You know, it was local Boston media outlets. Now we're starting to see CNN. We're seeing Fox News. We're seeing national media outlets, international, when you have, like, the Daily Mail and whatnot. And I think it's going to be one of the biggest cases in the country. I mean, it's going to be rivals with Murdaugh and you name it, except this is going to have a happier ending.
Yeah, I saw today in the New York Post, they also picked up on it. And again, like you said, it's the Daily Mail, it's the New York Post. It's people that know what drives clicks and what people are interested in. And there's no denying that this story is getting asses in the seats. People want to hear what's going on. They want updates. And Turtle Boy, where can they get them if they want to hear from you?
TBDailyNews.com, or you can go to our YouTube channel and subscribe there, Turtle Boy Live, or you can check out my Twitter account at Dr. Turtle Boy, D-O-C-T-O-R, Turtle Boy, because if Joe Biden's a doctor, so am I.
Wait, and one more question, Turtle Boy. You said how many jurors were selected today? Do you know already?
I've been told three.
We're up to seven.
More jurors in there. Yeah, that's what I'm told.
Okay, so it's still going to be a long road, but like Turtle Boy said, we'll probably have the jurors selected all by Friday, which means this trial can really get into gear, and they think it's going to go on for a pretty long time. I'm sure we'll hear from Turtle Boy. Hopefully he'll have a little bit of time to give us more later on in this trial. We will be right back, 844-500-4242. Don't go anywhere. This is the Grace Curley Show.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Turtle Boy is not wrong about how this has accelerated pretty quickly. I mean, it's been getting a lot of national attention. I wouldn't say a lot, but it's been breaking in there. You know, you'll see stories in Fox News, Massachusetts woman, you know, a trial develops, you know, things like that. But over the last couple of days, it's been getting a lot bigger. And that made me think of the New York Post. They love a name like Reed. Because they can put that in the headline, Jared. Read it and weep. There's going to be so many. If this gets as big as I think it's going to get in the next couple weeks, there's going to be a New York Post headline incorporating her last name in a punny kind of way in the Post. If they're if they're worth their salt. Today's poll question is brought to you by FlipLock. You may already have a home surveillance system, but what's going to physically stop an intruder from breaking down your door? A lot of people are saying, hey, we went on GraceCurlyShow.com. We didn't see it. Well, I've got you covered. I want you to go to FlipLock.com and you can save 20% with code GRACE20. That's FlipLock.com and save 20% code GRACE20. They did sell out on the website because they're so great and everybody wants one of these. And it's just a really great way to protect your home. And you can check out how they work at FlipLock.com. And then when you go to purchase it, because I have no doubt that you're going to want to, make sure you use code GRACE20 at checkout to save 20% off the already very reasonable price. Jared, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Today's poll question, which you can vote in at GraceCurlyShow.com, is who will have a harder time getting a fair jury, Donald Trump or Karen Reed?
I'm going to say Donald Trump. I think that from what I've read in the Herald about the juror selection for Karen Reed, they're having a very hard time finding people who aren't biased. But as Turtle Boy pointed out, I think they're biased in her favor. So I think things are looking good for Karen Reed. I think with Donald Trump, when I read about the juror selection of the person who worked for Disney and the person who reads the New York Times, I don't have a lot of confidence that Sapphire Blue Manhattan is going to be able to be impartial when it comes to Orange Man. But, you know, you never know. I've been wrong before.
91% of the audience now thinks Donald Trump will have a harder time.
Anti-Israel protesters targeting Biden in Pennsylvania. This is a chyron on Fox. I was reading today about these anti-Israel, you know, that's a euphemism right there, anti-Israel. I do it all the time. What's happening now, when you're chanting death to America, when you're cheering on Iran, it's no longer anti-Israel. I think we can take the leap and call you pro-Hamas, pro-terrorist. That's what's happening here. Because if you're chanting death to America, if you're saying from the river to the sea, if you are celebrating Iran firing missiles into Israel, we've crossed the Rubicon. Like, I think it's in Dearborn, Michigan, they're chanting death to America, death to Israel. Again, we've crossed a line, it's fair to say. And so I was reading today about in New York City in the subway, there was all of these pro-Palestinian activists who were chanting from the river to the sea, who were chanting things in support of Iran. And you had all these subway riders, some of them Jewish, who were just sitting there going, one of them was quoted as saying, this feels like something out of a sci-fi movie. Like, this feels like it's not real life. Unfortunately, it is. 844-500-4242. Oh, yeah, here's a story right here. It says, disturbing moment. Anti-Israel protesters swarm NYC subway chanting, Iran, you make us proud. And you know what the other story that caught my eye? I think it was in the Washington Post, but I'd have to double check. But it was a story about, because remember how cancel culture, when it was happening to MAGA people, when it was happening to, you know, comedians who made a homophobic joke 30 years ago, that was all well and good. Like, you could dox people, you could get people fired. If somebody supported Donald Trump, you could run them out of house and home. Nothing was off limits. But now that cancel culture has come for the people who are tearing down pictures of innocent Israeli babies who are being held hostage, now that people who are chanting things like from the river to the sea, that their bosses aren't thrilled with this and they go, eh, you don't have to come back. Yeah, we're not interested. We're not interested. If you want to tear down pictures of Israelis who are being, and Americans who are being held hostage, you're not the kind of employee we want. Now there was a piece, and I do think it was in the Washington Post, that said they critiqued Israel. They criticized Israel. Then their lives changed forever. Again, they criticized Israel. I wouldn't say tearing down a poster of an innocent baby being held hostage by savage terrorists is criticizing Israel. We'll be right back.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. A lot of things I want to hit here before we wrap it up for the day. So let's first, though, go to the callers. Henry, you're up next on the Grace Curley Show. What's going on, Henry?
Hi, Grace. I'm really upset about the judge and how he's treating President Trump and not allowing him to go to Barron's graduation. Do you know, was President Trump in court the same days that Don Jr., Eric, Ivanka, and Tiffany had their high school graduations?
What?
He didn't attend any of their graduations, so he must have been in court, right?
Oh, you got me, Henry! Thumbs up. Good one. I don't know. Did he not attend their graduations? Oh my gosh, then you're right. You know what? In that case, 100 years in jail. Forget it. Throw out the rule of law. We have to put everything aside. Shouldn't he have the option either way, though? Even if he doesn't want to go, Henry. But you got me. You're right.
Yeah, you know,
such a bad man. This is what I hate, though. And I'm going to be perfectly honest with people. I never come on here and try to tell anybody that I think Trump is the best person, has a moral compass, that we should be taking our parenting advice from him. I will say, I think he has good kids, but that's neither here nor there. I always say I think he was a good president. He made good policy decisions. But what I hate about the strategy, I'm not going to say I hate Henry because I don't hate Henry, but what I hate about that strategy is I love having conversations with people who want to have actual conversations. I do not like putting someone on the air when from the second they start talking, I can hear this like smarmy, smart ass tone that you think you're going to, aha, you got me. And it's like, for what? Okay, so Trump didn't go to his other kids' graduations. Like, that's why I just wasted 25 seconds of that call not knowing what you were going to say. This ominous, weird, sarcastic call to tell me Trump didn't go to his kids' high school graduations. Great. I still think he should be president. Was that supposed to change my mind? I still don't think that we should be weaponizing the legal system in this country to take him down. Is that now a reason, Jared, to have someone tied up in court to have all this lawfare when people don't go to their kids' high school graduations? Maybe in Henry's world, maybe if Henry was the dictator for the day, but not in my world. But you got me, Henry. I mean, mark it on your whiteboard. Good one. I don't get, it's always the same thing with these callers. It's like, hey, and they want to start off with this fake, genuine call. Hey, Grace, you know, I think, and then and then the other shoe drops and they hit you with that side one. Oh, actually, but it's like that's it. That's your big point. I'm not impressed by that. Maybe you're right. Maybe he didn't. Maybe he did. I have no idea. I'm not. Here's the other part, Henry, that I want you to understand. I'm not as in the weeds about this man's personal life as you are. Like, I guarantee you, Henry, for someone who hates Trump, knows so much more about the man than I do. The fact that he even knows that, it's like, go outside, touch grass, take a breath of fresh air. Instead of sitting around waiting to call me to tell me that Trump didn't go to his kids' high school graduations, you need hobbies, Henry. That's what you need. 844-500-4242. But congrats. I hope you feel good today. Hey, I wanted to switch here. We can still keep going with this because now people are going to call in about that. And I'm sure we'll have plenty of conversations about Ivanka Trump's high school graduation. Talk about great radio. I want to talk about a situation that's brewing now about, speaking of actually graduations, not high school graduations, but did you see this story, Jared, about the University of Southern California?
I'm not sure.
It's still kind of developing, so I'm just going to read straight from CBS. It says, pro-Palestinian valedictorian speaks out after USC cancels speech. The University of Southern California valedictorian, whose planned graduation speech was canceled due to what the school referred to as safety concerns, told CBS that she feels betrayed by the academic institution. Now, she majored in biomedical engineering. She had a minor in resistance to genocide, an interdisciplinary series of courses that researches the causes. It has to do with genocide, mass violence, according to USC's website. Now, she was criticized for social media posts that people thought promoted anti-Semitism and had anti-Zionist rhetoric. The school, this is the statement. So they first come out and say it's safety. She says she feels betrayed by the school. And I believe the provost said social media discussions regarding her selection had taken on an alarming tenor and escalated to the point of creating substantial risks relating to security, prompting the cancellation. I'm going to say something that might surprise people here. I don't think that's right. If she's the valedictorian and this was her speech, see, but here's where I'm kind of torn. And it actually involves a couple questions I have. Maybe people can answer this. One, I think if she's anti-Semitic, if she's anti-Zionist, if she's going to be spewing hate during this speech, then I'm always pro letting people do that because I think it's good for people to know what these schools are promoting or what these minors or majors or degrees are promoting, what this indoctrination in this country, like where we're at. I think we have to be honest with ourselves. I don't think censoring people ever helps. But then I also have, I had this other thought where USC, for example, they might have looked at what's happening in these other schools, whether you're talking about MIT or Harvard, and they might say, we don't want this student to get up to give an anti-Semitic speech, and then all of our donors to start pulling money from the school. And then I kind of go, well, they have a right to do that too. Like, they have a right to protect their school's reputation. And then I think, I just read the story like 2 minutes ago, so this is a lot of, you're working through this with me. But I remember in high school, if you wrote a speech for something like a high school graduation, you had to run it by the teachers. Like, they had to, they didn't want people getting up there and saying anything crazy. So you had to run it by them. And so I do wonder, and I'm sure there'll be think pieces on this by 4 o'clock today. I do wonder if freedom of speech and, you know, being able to say whatever you want, if it doesn't really apply, not that it doesn't apply, but like if a college graduation, if they're more allowed to say, well, this is what we want for our graduation, we don't want that kind of speech here. Do you know what I'm saying? So I'm kind of torn. Yeah. It's like I'm pro letting someone say what they're going to say, even if it's awful. Even if people get up and walk out, then get up and walk out. That's what happens at a lot of these graduations. A speaker gets up, people don't like that person, they leave. But the only thing that's changing my mind on it is, well, what if the school doesn't want to jeopardize the money they get from donors and doesn't want to be in the spotlight and have a reputation as having anti-Semitic students? Then I guess maybe if it's something that they've done before, they can say, listen, we don't think that you should give this speech. But my initial reaction is let her give the speech. You might disagree with the speech. You might not like it. But if she's the valedictorian and you told her she was going to give a speech, don't take the cop out either of saying safety concerns, because now you're giving us two different reasons that are not in the same wavelength. You have safety concerns and then you have, well, you know, people were really disagreeing with it on social media. First of all, pick a lane and stick by it. But I just think you should let her talk.
Yeah, I have no problem with that. Let people reveal who they are, especially if she's the valedictorian USC, which is a prestigious school. Let people see who she is. Let her not get a job in the bioengineering, whatever her field is. Let people see that this is a person you don't want to hire. You have a platform. You have a stage. If that is what is most important to you, is to be anti-Semitic, put it out there. Let the world see who you are.
Yeah, and then the other part of me goes, well, perhaps now they're saying, well, this isn't reflective of who we are, so we don't want her to give a speech. But maybe it's really just they're reading the room and they're realizing, yeah, like 5 years ago, we would have said this is who we are and this is okay. And, you know, we have a very diverse group of opinions here. But now they're like, eh, money's on the line. We don't want people to know this is who we are. We'd rather.
I think that's
probably more in line.
More along the line of what it is.
But let the record show, I do think she should be able to give the valedictorian speech. I know people aren't going to like that, but that's just how I feel. I know people online who are anti-Henry, and that's beautiful, and I love you guys for that. But there's two other things I wanted to mention. I did want to say something about Caitlin Clark. I'm not a sports fanatic by any means, but we talked about Caitlin Clark a few weeks ago. I was watching some of the games. What was it? What was the first one? It was Iowa versus, it was a really good game. It was before the South Carolina. I don't know. I was watching a couple of them and I thought, wow, this is really great. Jemele Hill came out and said the only reason Caitlin Clark's getting all this attention is because she's white and it's a predominantly black sport. And I came on the show and I said, I think it's so awesome. I think it's really cool that a female basketball player has, you know, male celebrities in the audience and people betting on this and people getting so into it. And, you know, young girls watching her and thinking, I want to be like Caitlin Clark. I want to be a basketball player. I thought that was all really cool. And now there's another controversy because people can't just enjoy things. Like the only time people really want to get involved in anything or really want to is if they can complain about something. So now the latest complaint that's coming out is she signed with the WNBA and people are mad about her salary, which they don't think is enough. And now Joe Biden, like he has nothing else to flip and worry about. This, when I tell you there's so many layers of this that get me angry, one is the fact that if people watched the WNBA like they watch the NBA, then Caitlin Clark would be getting paid more. And by the way, Caitlin Clark's going to do just fine. She's got plenty. She's got Panera as an endorsement. She's got Nike. She's like an ambassador for all these huge brands. She's going to make plenty of money. So I don't think people are actually worried about that. But it's, you know, it's the principle of the matter. Well, even if you go with the principle of the matter, the WNBA is not a charity. It's a business. And for businesses to pay people a lot of money, they have to make a lot of money. And the WNBA is not as profitable as the NBA. And for all these women, I keep seeing all these women on Instagram being like, I just heard about Caitlin Clark's salary. My question to them would be, how many WNBA games have you gone to? How often do you have it on in the background when you're doing your skincare routine? How many jerseys do you have of WNBA players? How many WNBA players can you name? Guess what? I can name like two. Caitlin Clark, she's not even one yet. She's going to be one. And Lisa Leslie, because she used to be on Sister Sister. I don't know a lot of them because I don't watch it a lot.
And Lisa Leslie has been retired for probably 9 or 10 years.
Exactly.
Just to prove the point.
And it's and what I'm saying here is not, it's not a slight on WNBA players at all. But it's more of a knock on people who want to complain now that these players aren't getting paid more, but they don't want to put in any of their own time or effort to supposedly enjoy this thing that's so great. Like, if you love these players so much, if you think they should be getting paid as much as NBA players, go to the flipping games. I want to read you something, okay? This was in Fox News. It says the 2023 WNBA season was the most watched regular season in 21 years, averaging 505,000 viewers among ESPN, ABC, and CBS. The attendance was up 16% compared to last year. The average attendance in 2023 was 6,615 fans, and the total attendance was 1,587,488. So that all is like, oh, great. And that's wonderful that it's increasing. The enthusiasm's increasing. But just to give you a comparison, which I would have thought would be in here on Fox, seems kind of relevant since everyone who's mad is comparing Caitlin Clark to the NBA rookie, like the number one pick of the NBA rookie. I don't know all the terminology. But that's what the comparison everyone's making. Then shouldn't you also be comparing the stats of the viewership between the WNBA and the NBA? Because the NBA, unlike the WNBA, brings in about 18,000 people per average game. They bring in about 1.5 million people in viewership. So there's a big disparity here in numbers, and that's going to represent itself in the salaries that you're paying people. And I know my audience knows this. I know most regular people know this. But the fact that the president of the United States comes out and says that he, women in sports continue to push. By the way, women in sports, suddenly he cares about that. That's a riot to me. Oh, what is a woman, Joe? Are you a biologist all of a sudden? Women in sports continue to push new boundaries and inspire us all. But right now we're seeing that even if you're the best, women are not paid their fair share. It is, out of all the stupid arguments people make, I find this to be possibly, this one stands alone. Because it's so easy to explain to someone. I'm not even good at math. I'm not even a sports fan. And I can understand supply and demand. If you don't get asses in the seats, someone's going to get a pay cut. Someone's not going to be able to make LeBron-style money if people aren't going to see them play?
Grace, you can understand. He's looking at this as, how much value can I trade a terrorist for this person, potentially?
It reminds me of people who, like, hate Trump but don't watch CNN. Eventually, you're going to have to put in the effort here. Like, if you get so mad that women aren't getting paid their fair share in the WNBA, I hate to break it to you, ladies, you're going to have to start watching the WNBA. Clearly, it's going to be painful for you because none of you have been tuning in thus far, but you might have to do it. You might have to just have it on in the background if you really care that much. And how about this? You might actually have to go to one of the games. Buy a ticket. I'm sure it's a very reasonable price. But, like, put your money where your mouth is. You want Caitlin Clark to get paid more than she's getting paid, then cough it up, sister. The sisterhood. We got to start going to these games. We got to start watching this. You can't just complain. Out of all the things I was going to get mad about, I didn't expect it to be that. But hey, you never know. Face it, the world is a scary place. It seems like the current administration is on a mission to make life more dangerous, while at the same time, they want to make it harder for you to protect yourself. Well, FlipLock is here, and FlipLock is the answer. It's a security door lock. It's unpickable, unbreakable, and it's 10 times stronger than a deadbolt. It can withstand over 1,500 pounds of pressure. When you turn on the news, it's difficult to escape a headline about home invasions, break-ins, it's all very scary, and you should be doing everything you can to protect yourself. What I love about the Flip Lock is it's not a high-tech security system. It's not something that's complicated to install. It's not something that's going to cost you thousands of dollars. It's a physical way to stop an intruder with something that's way more powerful than a deadbolt, but is just as easy to use. And I love the Flip Lock because it reinforces my door to protect my family from intruders. And you can see it when you walk by. You can see if it's activated or if it's unlocked. And it's just it gives you a lot of peace of mind. The Revere Public Schools installed Flip Lock in their classrooms. You can send one to your grandkids if they're in a dorm, whatever it might be. It's perfect. So go to FlipLock.com and save 20% with code GRACE20. That's FlipLock.com, FlipLock.com, and save 20% with code GRACE20. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Grace Curley Show. It's time for the car crossover. Howie Carr, are you with us, sir?
I am.
He's back, everybody. And Howie, one of the big stories that has been being talked about and been written about in the Boston Herald involves Tsarnaev and this money that he has in his canteen account in prison, including $1,400 of COVID relief payment. We found out about that a few years ago. But do you think he should have to hand over this money? It's now up to $4,200 in this account.
Yes, I do. The first time I saw the story, I misread it, and I thought that he had $1 million in his canteen account. And I thought, oh, my God, I knew we lived in a sick society. But it turns out $1 million is just how much they're saying it's already cost to keep him in prison.
Yes.
And I think that's a small figure compared to the cost of his trial. And he continues to appeal his death sentences. Remember, it cost millions to have Whitey Bulger's pro bono defense, his public defenders, because he claimed he was indigent, even though it's stolen millions of dollars. And it was even worse for Tsarnaev. Remember, they had the special jury selection teams that they brought in. This is like experts on how to pick a jury.
Well, Howie, he's also been ordered to pay over $100 million in criminal restitution. He's only paid $2,600. So let's throw that $4,200 in and at least get that up to over $6,000. Yeah. That's one idea.
Meanwhile, Stevie Flemmy will be up for parole in 2018.
Howie Carr coming up next.